podcast is brought to you from CistoCast Studios in Townsend Hall on the campus of the University of Missouri-Columbia. Tonight joining us is Beth Wakely, who is interviewing Laura Hammerschmidt.
Hello, Laura. I am bringing my Managing the School Library students to this broadcast because I want them to learn from you what it is like to be working with a large jobber. And you are a representative of Mackin Library Services, so would you start out by telling us something about your company?
Sure, Beth. First of all, let me thank you so much for allowing me to join you in your class this evening. I consider it an honor to be asked to do this. Mackin Library Services has been in business for over 23 years, serving the needs of school libraries and classrooms. We have services our number one priority, and we are working worldwide with the Department of Defense, so we really are represented across not only the United States but throughout the world. And Mackin is a book wholesaler, meaning that we don't publish anything, whereas a publisher or a publishing company makes the decision as to what to print and issues that material and prints the material. But a wholesaler, or another term is jobber, such as Mackin, carries materials from all the different publishers. Right now we're working with over 18,000 publishers, both in the United States and the UK and in Mexico. And so we're really trying to be a one-source stop, sort of like an acquisition service to make it a time-saving tool for librarians.
All right. My students currently have an assignment they're working on that they have been gifted with $300 for them to spend. They have to choose their goal. And I have asked them to use Mackin. Mackin was very easy for me to set up the phony accounts with them. But if you were going to give someone who has never made a book order before advice, what would you tell them to do first?
Well, first of all, I'd ask them to set the parameters and be very specific about the searches that they want to conduct. $300, unfortunately, in this day and age, as far as book purchases go, is not going to get you real far. So you want to be very, very selective about how you go about making your choices. I'd be very careful to read reviews on the selections that I'm making, and to really define the interest level that I'm searching for.
Okay, one other thing that I don't think my students may know is that books come in various types of bindings. Would you just go over the various types of bindings?
Yes, I would. The first one I'd like to talk about is a library reinforced binding, or sometimes you'll hear those flipped as a reinforced library binding. This is really the best binding that you can buy to use in a library setting. The original publisher's binding is there, but there's an additional strength added on the spine. They might add extra sewing, or they might put a strip of tape down the spine. It's really designed to have high-volume library use. A second type of binding is called a trade binding. Now, this is a hardcover, too, but it's just a standard hardback binding. The pages are usually glued as opposed to being sewn in the reinforced library binding. And the trade binding is really the most common as to what you'll see in a bookstore or a Walmart, someplace like that. It's generally designed to not have as many circulations as a reinforced library binding.
These are also the bindings you'll find at book fairs.
Yes, exactly. And I'm often asked, somebody will be looking through our catalog and they'll say, "Wow, I saw this at Walmart, and it was $5 cheaper." Well, that's the difference there. You're looking at a trade versus a library binding. And another type of binding that is very common in the marketplace is called a pre-bound paperback binding, and you'll see that under a variety of names such as Mackin-bound, Follett-bound, Perma-bound. What this indicates is that they have started with a paperback version of the book, and they have converted that to a hardcover. The original glued binding is removed from the book. It's actually put in a cutting machine, and that's cut off. And then the pages are sewn or glued, depending on the thickness of the book, and they have library institute standards that they have to meet. And just about all the companies are offering a lifetime guarantee on these pre-bound paperbacks. When the product's finished, it looks like a computer-scanned cover of the original cover, but the book is actually a hardcover now.
Okay. One thing that I like to do with books that only come in paperback, which I appreciate that Mackin does at a reasonable price, is to put a Capco cover on. You want to talk about those?
I do. What the Capco cover does is reinforce the cover of the book. It also adds a little bit of reinforcement to the spine of the book, but it does not really make a significant changes to the binding of the pages of the book. Other than that, it gives it a little tightened feeling to the binding. In other words, this plastic, and I can't think of the thickness of the mill.
They are fairly thick.
Yes, they are. I just saw a presentation on that, too, 2 weeks ago. But what it does, it's a laminate that is applied to the cover of the book, and it really adds a lot of reinforcement. So what you don't have is the curling of the paperback covers.
Yeah, I like to do that. There are some books that I order only come in paperbacks, and I like to have the Capco put on it because it does give them a few more circulations. Usually it's the type of title that I'm not really interested in having that it's not going to be around for a real long time.
Right.
But it does make it last a bit longer. While we're right here, we haven't talked about in real life processing. And that would be something you would do before you even did your first order. You would decide what kind of processing you would want. Do you want to go over some of the things that my students should be looking at?
Sure, exactly. What you want to make sure that you're working with is a company that can really customize the processing to your specific needs. And what I mean by that is when you specify how you want your call numbers, make sure that they can do that. That if you use 92 for your biographies, that their only option is not a B. You want to stay away from those companies. You want to make sure that you've got a company that can really work to your specific needs.
And I should stop and mention that there are three different ways to do biographies, so that is something that you really do need to check. There are a lot of schools in the St. Louis area that still use a B for biography. A lot use 92. Actually, there's four ways. I've seen 921, and then there are still schools that put, say, if it's a baseball player, they'll put it with the baseball books.
Right.
So that's entirely up to the district or the individual school as to how they're doing that, but you want to be consistent so that your students know where to find those books.
Absolutely. Or you're going to make a lot of work for yourself if it doesn't come in the way you want it. And what you'll see the term used is automated processing packaging. And since virtually all of the libraries are automated now, what you want to make sure that you're getting is a full machine-readable cataloging record, also known as a MARC record. And they vary from company to company, so you might want to take a look before you start working with a company, have them send you some samples, make sure that it's a full record. And by that I mean, does it have complete subject headings? Does it have an annotation? Because what you put into your computer is how your students are going to find those books, and if you, it's junk in, junk out.
Exactly.
Also with the automated processing package, you generally get a barcode applied to wherever you specify, and you generally get the Mylar covers around your dust jackets taped down, and you get your spine label on the spine. So other than some stamping, with property stamping, the books truly come ready to go on the shelves.
Excuse me. I still get a pocket and a card in my books because Mackin offers it. I like having the pocket, and sometimes just having that card in there will write the date due on that. The school I came from before where I am now, we had given up pockets, and we would just stamp on a little slip of paper that was in the book. For some reasons, I could not convert my current population to that. So I appreciate that I get that extra pocket put in there for no extra charge, which your company does for me.
That's nice, and you want to watch it if you do decide you want to keep a pocket or a borrower's card because the charges can go anywhere from free up to, 45 cents for pockets.
Yeah, so I've seen them even higher.
Consider that. A lot of schools also that are using security systems have their little teeny beepers behind the pockets, so they're using that to cover the security as well. So a lot of times they're still continuing to use pockets too.
Right. So it's nice to know that you can get it for free, because I'm always out for getting something for free if possible. Also, we briefly mentioned Mylar. There could be some people that don't understand. Mylar is just a plastic covering that goes over your book cover. It helps protect that book jacket, and it just makes your books look nicer on the shelf. I happened to follow someone who didn't like Mylar and was shocked to discover that, because my first order came in and all my book jackets were separate. So we took the time to cover all those books with Mylar, which was a step I never thought I'd ever be doing. But that is something to think about, because it does really protect your book and make it last a little bit longer.
It really does. And people do judge books by their covers, whether we like to believe
exactly.
that or not. And I can't stress enough the benefits of getting all of this done by your book supplier, as opposed to you trying to spend your time doing a lot of this yourself. Now, in your case, you had no choice because
right.
you got all these uncovered books. But what can happen is you end up with a lot of books sitting in boxes behind your desk waiting to go out on the shelves, because finding time to do the processing when your primary concern is serving your patrons,
exactly.
that's something that can get put off for quite a while. So I get as much processing up front as you possibly can.
I agree. And we probably should mention barcodes again. You can put the barcode wherever you want. Usually, nowadays, you're going to follow somebody else who made that decision some years ago. You want to make sure when you check that the company you're ordering your books from is going to put that barcode in the same place, because if you're doing inventory and you have the barcode in all different places, that's going to slow you down. You want to always be consistent about where you put that barcode. And from another personal experience, I will mention with the barcodes, when you get that box of books delivered to you, always scan them to make sure the barcode is correct. Having had just an awful experience with a different wholesaler, I learned that I always want to scan and make sure they put it on, because to be honest, you look at the barcodes, I can tell some right when I look at them are not correct, but a lot of them are very, very similar. And if you haven't scanned it, you won't know if it's going to work.
That's really true. And the length can vary, and what's called the symbology, how all those little lines line up, that's determining whether it can scan into your system or not. And they do look a lot alike. So you want to make sure that you've provided your vendor with the correct symbology to match your automated software that you're using in your library.
Exactly. And it's always wise, you always should. I can't think of a reason you wouldn't. Give a range to whoever you're getting your books from. And when you're sending in your order, you should fill out on your sheet to start with the next barcode. And that way you don't have to look it up each time to see what was the last barcode they sent you. Just give them a large range with a couple thousand numbers. And then you will know that they will use it. And when they start to run low, they will contact you and say, hey, we're getting towards the end of the numbers. What number do you want us to go to?
That's a great idea, because that's all kept on databases, and the computer automatically knows what number to begin with next, so you can't overlap. Whereas if you're just keeping it manually order by order in a little notebook, you could easily make the mistake. If you do make the mistake, I might want to point out, all of the companies that I'm aware of will be able to fix that for you. Don't go into a panic and think, oh, my goodness, I have to do this all on my own now. Just call that company and tell them that you need a new set of barcodes with a new starting number, and they'll send you new records and new barcodes to fix the problem.
Yeah, I think they've learned that none of us are perfect.
Right.
And
that goes
all
both ways.
We need help sometimes. But it's easy to panic when that happens to you. Having lived through that, even though it was not my fault, I had filled out the form correctly, but I couldn't tell that the barcode was incorrect.
No, and then they all got shelved.
Yeah,
and
something
one thing
else
I might
we haven't
add
mentioned is a fill rate.
Okay. Let me say one thing else about processing, too.
Sure.
That you don't need to fill sheets out and specifications every time you send an order. Once you've established a working relationship with a company, just tell them to use your specifications on file. This is all kept on these automated databases now. They know what barcode number to use, and they know, for instance, how you do your biographies and how you do your fiction titles. It'll speed up the processing of your order if you just say, use my specs on file.
Right, and also always give them your email or phone number at school in case they do have a question.
Absolutely.
And that way they can contact you for clarification. Another thing I like to do is I like to send my order for the coming school year, because I always know my budget by the end of the year, but I'm not allowed to spend it before July 1st. So we don't want a bill coming in before July 1st. But I will send off the order, and then I will ask them not to ship until sometime in August. And the companies are fine with that.
Right, they sure are. And especially jobbers that are used to working with schools, most have a July 1 fiscal year that runs to the end of June. And they're used to that coming in over the summertime because others like you are the same thing. You want your new books when you get back to the start of the new school year. So the purchasing might hold it till July 1, or they might go ahead and send it and then request that it not be billed till after that date.
Yes, and another problem with having it sent over the summer, every school is cleaning all the rooms, waxing the rooms. I want to know that there's somebody there to look for the order and can make sure that it's put in the library, not down in the bookstore, not in some classroom or wherever, because there's nothing worse than knowing that there were 7 boxes delivered, but you can only find 6.
Right.
So, been there, too. So you really want to keep track of when things are going to be delivered. Okay, another thing on processing that I don't want to forget to mention, when you decide how you want your labels, there are some elementary schools that shorten their Dewey number just because they're a K-2 school or something like that. Others want to take it out further. That's another processing choice that the librarian will decide. Also, I like to have capital letters for my cutter number.
Mm-hmm.
Some people only want the first letter to be capitalized. So it's all personal preference.
That's right.
And just so that you're consistent with your entire library.
Right. Make sure you find somebody that can.
Okay, we started to talk, but really didn't talk very much about some of the searching features. And I know you mentioned to me that Mackin is going to be changing some things, so we should probably let everyone know about that, too.
Okay. What we're going to do
with the advanced searching and the basic searching.
Right.
Laura, did I lose you?
I can hear you. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, Beth?
Yes, now I can.
Okay. I could hear you throughout.
Oh, okay.
One thing that we're changing on the website, we thought it was a little confusing to have the basic search and have the advanced search. All of the features that you see under the advanced search will now show up on the search screen. So you can search by reading levels, interest levels, review sources, number of reviews, and what you want to do is set up the criteria for your search with your reading and interest level, and, of course, your keyword search. And the more that you add onto that page, though, the more specifications, the more narrow your search is going to be. So if you hit search and you get no results, then back up your copyright date, your publication date. Maybe you've got too narrow of a date put in there. Maybe you've specified 4 reviews and there aren't any books out there that have had 4 reviews on that particular topic. Take that down to 2. Widen your publication date search. But get a list that's workable for you to go in and scroll through the list and really evaluate the books that are out there that are available from the various publishers.
Okay, I'm hoping that they are not losing you the way I'm losing you when I'm listening here. And I'm hoping Clayton is listening can adjust this. One thing I also wanted to mention that Mackin is doing, and to be honest, some of the other vendors are also doing, they're tying curriculum standards into book lists so that if you are trying to build up in a particular curriculum strand, you can take a look at what they're suggesting that they have gone through to see what Missouri students are looking for in a particular grade level, to see what Illinois students or Kansas students. Would you want to mention some of the other lists that Mackin provides?
Absolutely. Under suggested list in classroom services, there is just a wealth of lists available where our degreed librarians at Mackin have created lists of well-reviewed books that tie into the state standards. So you could go in, for instance, and click on math or social studies and then refine the list down to exactly what you're looking for. But if you clicked on the math list, it's going to break it down and it's going to say algebra, geometry, trigonometry. And so you can go into those particular lists and see what matches to what you're looking for. It's all meant to be a time-saving tool. But we're really trying to focus on the various state standards and really tie into what would be most beneficial to have in the library to support what they're doing in the classroom.
I've also noticed that Mackin is very quick when Mazel comes out with the Show Me readers and the Gateway readers and the Mark Twain readers to let the librarians know, I'm on your email list, and they let me know when those new lists are out and give me a price list if I wanted to buy an entire set.
Right.
Which I think is also very helpful.
The day those lists are announced is the day that we try and get those posted to the website. And this year we actually have posted the preliminary list, the big list, before the final list is announced to the website.
Okay. Now, have we missed anything else? Because we still have some time here that I'm not thinking of right this moment. Of ways that the jobber, one thing I like that your company does is they send out what is called a compendium, which are the books they feel their librarians who are working there are going to be the ones that are going to be well-reviewed and on, like the ALA's best books, et cetera. Is there anything else here you can think of that we are forgetting to mention right now?
Oh, a couple of free services that are offered. Compendium's very good because it's like, what is the best of the best? It's sent out in fall and it's sent out in spring, and it's like, what are going to be the hot titles? But other services that are available are assistance with collection development, that you can call and talk to our librarians on staff and say, you know what, I don't have time to work with the website. This is what I'm looking for. Create a list for me. I have this much money to devote to this. And they will do that free of charge. Another free service is collection analysis, where you can do an export of your collection and send that up. And what they'll do is send you a report back in a PDF file and online, and it'll take your entire collection and break each Dewey range down by how many books you have in that range and what is the average age. And then our program is called CAPS, which means Collection Analysis Plus Solutions, whereby on the back end, once you've identified the areas that are weak, we'll help you find titles to fill in those gaps.
Another thing I recommend is that if you've done a lot of weeding or you've added a lot of books, maybe you've had donations or for some other reason, you can also send off your collection and then they can match it so that you don't order a book that you already have on the shelf. Because in all honesty, it's hard to know every single book that you have, especially if you're reading all the time. And I know in the past, before they had these kind of services, I've ordered the same book in two different bindings, and even though I double-checked my orders, I didn't catch it.
Right, because with a large collection, there's no way of knowing and remembering. So with TitleMatch, you can go in and look at the website. After you've exported your records and we've run the analysis, it's going to tell you, hey, you have that book, so you're not spending your time going from your catalog back to the website, back and forth.
Exactly. One other thing I like is that they give you the choice of bindings. If I put a title in that I've read a review on and I want to learn a little bit more, they will let me know whether it's available as Mackin bound, which is that rebound, or if it's in trade binding, or if it's paperback, et cetera, et cetera. They also, when you send your order in, another thing to check that I didn't mention before, sometimes there will be a video or an audio book with the same title. You may or may not want that. You may want the actual just book. So it's always good to let them know if this order that's going is only books, because then the Mackin will catch if you have accidentally keyed in the wrong thing.
Right.
Because it hard as we work, it's easy to make mistakes.
It is, and it's you're reading through a screen of titles, it's very easy to click on a wrong box. Sometimes that'll generate a phone call, and they'll say, is that what you really meant? We just noticed you had one DVD on this order, and we just want to make sure that you have that.
Exactly, and that's correct. Another thing to mention, that you can get DVDs through Mackin, and you can get audiobooks. There's really a wide range of things, and it's so nice because you want to send in as few a purchase orders as possible. I also, depending on when I'm ordering, I don't usually like back orders because back orders tend to forget. Business offices want an invoice to be complete when they pay for it. So that's another thing I usually advise people, don't do back orders. Another thing we should mention is librarians should always over-order by a certain percentage of the amount of money they have to spend, because inevitably something is out of stock or out of print.
That's true. And what we recommend is 10 to 15%. And say, do not exceed. That's a common term in the industry. Do not exceed $300. But send 10 to 15% more than that. So if something is going to be out of stock temporarily or it's gone out of print, then something else is there. And you could even send two lists and say, here's my A list and here's my B list. But if you don't want titles backordered and you want to spend all your money, which is especially crucial at the end of the year because it might be that you use it or you lose it, then make sure you're over-ordering or telling them to contact you for more titles.
Exactly. And especially if you're spending federal grant money, you have to spend every penny. You don't get a second chance. So whenever I have an order that I'm doing something like that, I always have extra titles in there. Tell them do not exceed, but I also include a note to contact me because I will give them more titles if necessary, because I want to make sure if I've taken the time to write a grant that I do get to spend every penny.
Absolutely. Okay. Another key thing to remember, too, we're talking about spending every penny, is at the end of a fiscal year, there's oftentimes when there's money left over in other accounts and it needs to be spent and zeroed out, and someone will come to you and say, do you need some extra funds to buy some books at the end of the year? Here's the kicker. I need a list by the end of the day. Always have a wish list going.
And you can save your wish list.
Spreadsheet. Just have some kind of a list ready to go that when they show up and they say they've got you some money, that you can hand them a list.
Yes, I always have multiple lists in Mackin so that I know, you know, I have the one list that I'm really working on, but then if I see something else, I will group them under different topics. And at some point in time, I may merge all the lists. But if somebody comes to me like that, because I've been in that situation more than once where I had 24 hours to spend, and I've heard of people with even less time. So you always want to have your wish list available. Something else I'll mention, I think your company has the most beautiful posters.
Oh, thank you.
And now that I've been ordering from you, they regularly send them to me. They always have something to do with reading. In fact, as far as I know, they always say read and then have a beautiful floral illustration. I can remember years ago they used to be animals, so I guess they change over time. But they also have the posters with the same photo in Spanish. And I know Spanish is taught in my high school. It's the heaviest taught language. So it's nice to have that. And Mackin has always sent me a couple extras so I can give one to the Spanish teachers.
Okay.
So I appreciate that, too.
I like that. And at the elementary level, we also do posters with the Caldecott and Newbery Award winners as well.
Okay, and all you have to do is request those.
That's right.
You know, so that's always nice to have. Now, I can't think of anything we have forgotten to mention.
I can't think of anything specific, and it looks like we're about right on our time.
Right, so. That's what I was just looking at. So I want to thank you for allowing me to interview you again. I appreciate it. I hope my students were able to learn something. It's hard when you become a school librarian. There are so many little bitty things that you need to learn, and ordering books is fun. But there's a lot of little glitches that can catch you if you don't know what you're doing.
There really are, and I really have to commend them. I think they're going through one of the best programs available. So good luck to everybody. I know there's easier ways to get it done, but I applaud you all for taking the time to invest in the classes.
Thank you. And good night.
That was the CISOcast broadcast of Beth Wakely interviewing Laura Hammerschmidt. We hope you enjoyed the show, and join us again.